This is Ron Orl. You're listening to the Activist Investing Today podcast. I'm super excited to speak today with Michael Levin, an activist investor and advisor who manages the Activist Investor website and blog. He's led numerous activist projects at U.S. public companies, and he serves on the board of Comerico and AG&E. He attended the University of Chicago and received his bachelor's and master's degree in economics. His career includes leadership positions at Towers Perrin and Deloitte, and finance executive positions at CNH and NICOR. Thank you, Michael, for taking the time.
I'm pleased to be here.
Okay, so I've been looking forward to this podcast for a while. Today we're going to be talking about one of my favorite subjects, corporate governance, Elon Musk, Tesla, and Delaware. And I guess we could throw in dual class voting power, but I guess that fits under governance as well. The gift that keeps on giving. Recently, Tesla CEO Elon Musk tweeted that he was, quote, uncomfortable growing Tesla to be a leader in artificial intelligence and robotics without having approximately 25% voting control. He said enough to be influential, but not so much that he can't be overturned. Musk, of course, owns 13% of Tesla's shares. So giving him 25% of the vote would be setting up, presumably a dual class share structure, giving him super voting shares, which is not something you typically see at companies that have been publicly traded. But anyways, I'm curious to see how that might play out. Okay. So he also tweeted after releasing a poll, quote, Tesla will move immediately to hold a shoulder vote to transfer state of incorporation to Texas. His thoughts about moving Tesla's corporate domicile to Texas and asking for more powerful shares came after Delaware Chancellor Kathleen McCormick issued a decision to rescind a pay package for him, potentially worth as much as $55.8 billion. It also came after the Tesla board of directors, including Musk's brother, Kimball Musk, agreed in July 2023 to a clawback of $735 million in their own stock and cash compensation and some serious reforms in how the board pays itself, including having shareholders approve board compensation. So I'm curious a little bit about this. Michael, you had a role in the board compensation clawback case. Maybe we could start, you can quickly explain what your involvement was.
Overall, my involvement was I objected to the settlement. So I'm a Tesla shareholder. Mm-hmm. And they announced this settlement of litigation, as you said, last July. And I read over the settlement and I noticed in the governance reforms a potential gap having to do with how shareholders would vote on the board compensation and they were agreed to do this for a period of 5 years. And I noticed this gap. I researched it a little bit, talked to some Delaware counsel. I drafted an objection. I filed it with the Delaware Chancery Court. The hearing on the settlement was mid-October last year. So I got myself over to Wilmington, Delaware and appeared before Chancellor McCormick to plead the objection. They were really nice to me. I'd never done this before. Represented myself, pro se, as they say. And we're still waiting for the outcome of her order about whether to approve the settlement. We'll see if we have an impact here, if we're able to kind of improve how that shareholder vote will work. But yeah, that was my role. And as a consequence, I really dove deep into how that board compensation case worked and also a little bit into how the Musk's own compensation case worked out, which was that verdict that was announced in this past January.
So I guess maybe you could just kind of follow up on that just very briefly. If you win this case and they adjust I presume it would adjust the settlement, what kind of broader implications do you think that might have on having shareholders approve board compensation? Because you have say on pay, which is a non-binding vote that came in Dodd-Frank, but this is different, right?
Yeah, this would be different. So there were two parts to the settlement. There was the clawback of the money, $735 million, which was unprecedented. It's one of the top couple derivative lawsuit settlements in Delaware ever. And that represented about a third of director comp for the period of time, which was 2017 through about 2020. But they also agreed to these governance reforms. And there were really three. First was like following a better process for how the board determines its comp, you know, how they're going to hire consultants and how their peer groups work and so forth. The second was better disclosure of the comp in the proxy materials that shareholders receive. And those two reforms are nice. You know, investors like me, you know, we like process and disclosure, but, you know, ho-hum, you know, we'd like to, you know, that's something that you can, it's not really, you know, hugely material. The third reform was huge. It provided for a binding vote of shareholders on what the directors pay themselves for a period of 5 years. Interestingly, that binding vote would exclude any shares owned by directors. So Musk and Kimball Musk and so forth, but they would not be able to vote on their own comp. Mm-hmm. This represented an interesting and potentially unprecedented change in how shareholders relate to boards and directors. You know, the idea of shareholders being able to approve what their elected representatives get paid has never really been done before. Anyway, so if that happens, that would provide an enormous amount of authority for Tesla shareholders over the board, and presumably would make them, you know, somewhat more responsive to shareholder needs and concerns and so forth. What I saw when I was reading the proposed settlement was that that board, the language of the settlement could be interpreted to not necessarily make the vote binding. Language could have been interpreted to make it only advisory in the same way that executive say on pay is. Right. And I made that case. My argument about how it appears that the intent of the parties was to make it binding and so forth, and that we just need to fix that part of it. We're still waiting to hear whether the Chancellor McCormick agrees that this change is needed. And our hope is that she does agree and orders the parties to kind of strengthen the wording and strengthen the terms of that part of the settlement.
Mm-hmm. No, that is fascinating. A binding vote on compensation.
Oh, that would be unbelievable. You know, right now, shareholders, you know, the only, you know, direct impact that shareholders have is in elections. You know, we can or, you know, vote for one or another director. And the only time that that's really has any kind of leverage is in a contested election. You know, most of the time it's shareholders can try to deny of directors a majority. But even then, that doesn't usually have much of an impact on a board.
Yeah, no, I've seen lots of situations where a large majority of shares propose a director in an uncontested election, and that person is, you know,
still there.
They call zombie directors. They're just there every year. Companies that actually sometimes they argue that in this one case I'm thinking of said, oh, it was because of the compensation that shareholders voted against these two directors on the compensation committee. Right. In the contest election, and they changed the compensation. Therefore, those directors should remain, and the directors remained, and again got negative votes from shareholders. But you have to run your slate really to have a big difference.
Yeah, exactly. So this would be a very interesting and useful, you know, point of leverage. I would expect that most companies, you know, shareholders would approve, you know, the board compensation. But you know, at companies where it's a problem, such as Tesla. You know, the idea that if shareholders don't approve comp and then the directors don't get paid, that could be pretty material. We've actually studied and now proposed this at a bunch of companies this year. That's for a different discussion. Mm-hmm. But there's some binding proposals out there at some companies for this year's annual meetings. We'll see how those go.
Binding shareholder votes on compensation. Definitely, if this starts to become a trend, I'll have to write an article about it. So
We'll keep you posted, but we proposed something similar of what Tesla agreed to. We proposed that at about a dozen companies this year, so it should be on the ballot at a bunch of companies for later on this proxy season.
Okay, so clearly Elon Musk is not happy about these Delaware decisions and wants to shift the incorporation for Tesla from Delaware to Texas after he had a poll. And so I guess I wanted to get your thoughts about, you know, how these court decisions are factoring to how Tesla's board, you know, they're under a lot of pressure now, response to Musk's demand, not just to reincorporate from Delaware to Texas, but also for this kind of very unusual request for a roughly 25% voting power.
Right. For
Musk, who had to sell some shares and now is when he's buying the Twitter, and now he owns 13% of Tesla. And I would note that Musk has already you know, in his frustration with Delaware over these decisions, has already moved SpaceX's incorporation from Delaware to Texas, and he moved his brain chip implant company, Neuralink, to Nevada from Delaware. And so, of course, it was a private, Tesla's is public. Just kind of walk me through, I guess, how you could move incorporation from Delaware to Texas. It needs a board and shareholder vote, and how's that going to play out?
So, again, there's sort of two related consequences of these two landmark court decisions. And both are based on CEO Musk's expressions of frustration or whatever. The first, as you said, was his demand for additional comp. And then the second is this indication that he would like to reincorporate Tesla out of Delaware at the frustration with the Delaware Chancery Court. Again, and this isn't his first time. Chancellor McCormick has presided over a number of cases where Tesla or Musk kind of lost out, either Musk personally or Tesla as a corporation. So there's ample record for him being frustrated with Delaware. But his tweeting it out and saying, we want to do this, and then taking a poll and saying, okay, Texas wins, that's kind of different than what he was able to do with his public companies. And as far as I know, there's two steps to this, and there are two big steps. The first is, you know, he can't just reincorporate without approval from shareholders.
Right.
Okay. And again, we're talking about a company that is today one of the most widely held equities in the world, in the US at least. Okay. You know, with his substantial individual, you know, retail shareholder base, significant institutional investors. Okay. And he's going to need approval from, I don't know the voting standard here, whether it's a majority of the votes or majority of the shares outstanding or whatever, but he can't just unilaterally decide that he wants to do this. He will need to get approval from a lot of shareholders who are all very interested in preserving their rights. Again, you know, there's other companies that might you know, be okay moving that don't have these two lawsuits behind them and other examples of really bad governance. But there's a lot of shareholders that are going to really look to Delaware to defend their rights at Tesla. So I would be skeptical that Tesla would win a shareholder vote to relocate out of Delaware to
okay. Michael, just to be clear and make sure I understand that it's, you know, even if the majority of shares, you know, whether it's a supermajority or majority of shares that's required to prove a reincorporation.
Yes.
I suspect that you require a change in the charter. And I think I went and looked that in the charter requires. I'll double check while we're on the.
It could be two thirds. It could be supermajority. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, right. I think it is. And it requires a change in the charter, right? Obviously.
So yeah. So 66.7%.
I'm pretty sure it's a 66.67% vote to reincorporate. But assuming they do, you're saying somebody would file a lawsuit in Delaware.
Exactly. Then there's the second stage. Is that there would be any one of a number of shareholder plaintiffs and law firms that would love to handle the case, given Tesla's history so far with litigation in Delaware, would love to handle a case challenging the decision to relocate out of Delaware based on how it diminishes their rights, how it represents, you know, abuse of a block holder's discretion and authority. It was just a case, you know, in the past couple of weeks where a preliminary decision was handed down where I can't remember the litigants, but where they wanted to re-domicile out of Delaware and the Chancery Court said you can't do that. So between losing a shareholder vote or needing to win a shareholder vote and then needing to prevail in litigation, you know, there's possibly a path where within the next few years, Tesla might succeed in overcoming both those obstacles. That's not going to be nearly enough time for someone like Musk to do this, to be able to say, you know, recover what he lost in the comp case, or for the board to try to respond to what they lost in their comp case.
So I just noticed on FactSet, it requires a supermajority vote to amend the charter and to amend change bylaws at Tesla.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Great.
6-7%. According to fact.
And there's an argument. Again, I don't litigate in Delaware except for this one time where I was an objector. You know, there's a significant argument that it's possible that Tesla's that the board or at least Musk's own shares can't count toward that vote.
Right. That's a good point. Yeah.
So those are pretty high hurdles. So again, you know, he can ask, you know, take polls and say, this is what we want. And Delaware is a really bad place to do business. But, you know, first, you got a lot of other shareholders that need Delaware to defend their interest in Tesla. And second, there's a lot of other shareholders that just a lot of investors that kind of like Delaware. Delaware is pretty reliable these days. It's, you know, fairly efficient way to get decisions done. And the law there is pretty well established. You know, there's a lot of activists I know, a lot of investors I know that get kind of aggravated with Delaware, you know, when they defend advance notice bylaws and make it much harder to get books and records and so forth. But in these couple instances, I think shareholders were kind of happy with how Delaware handled it.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like activists are secretly happy when the company, you know, that's a factor. It's a positive factor in their decision to launch a campaign at a company if it's incorporated in Delaware.
Absolutely.
Even though Delaware acts against them a lot, just because there's, you know, an understanding of how Delaware will act on certain things, like, you know, you can't postpone a meeting more than 13 months after the previous meeting, and right, other states are more flexible, let's say, with that.
Yeah, for as much as we grumble about Delaware, there's a lot for us shareholders to be happy about.
And I would also note that I just came back from the Tulane conference in...
Yeah.
And there was a lot of grumbling by Delaware practitioners about a series of recent decisions that have had some people questioning whether Delaware will continue to be the preeminent place that it has been for the last century and will continue to, you know, for incorporation. And, you know, and they didn't really focus on Elon Musk's grumblings about the Delaware, although one person did put up one of Elon Musk's tweets on the talked about it briefly. They were talking about a bunch of decisions, including this Ken Molas versus Molas decision and some other decisions.
Well, that's here, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So anyways, okay. So bottom line is, how do you think the board and Tesla share? I mean, you know, and I also would note that, you know, a lot of, you know, Tesla shareholders often support Elon Musk regardless of his action, you know, whether, you know, if he wants something to happen, a lot of times the shareholders will support.
Oh, yeah, there's a bunch of these retail shareholders that are in the stock because they just love him.
Yeah.
And, you know, the company's been hard to love in the past few months.
That's a good point.
Given how its shares have done.
Right. That's a good point.
but there's a lot of Elon Musk fanboys out there that are in the stock just because they either, you know, like the Musk entertainment value and or they like the prospects for the company. And, you know, it's sitting in a pretty good place in the, you know, transportation economy. So there's some good reason why he's going to continue to get this support. Saying that, though, you know, the board is under considerable pressure at this point to try to change things around somewhat, especially, you know, given the share price performance. There was a time a couple years ago when, you know, shares were soaring and the board could, you know, ignore a little bit or not necessarily take quite as seriously some of the criticism. But at this point, there's many more threats to the company where the board needs to respond in the right way. And that provides, I think, some of the background, some of the context here to some of the more immediate corporate governance stuff we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So bottom line, you know, how do you think the board and Tesla shareholders will act? You know, keeping in mind that it requires a super majority of shares to approve a change.
I don't think they're going to even try. I think that the board will, I could be wrong here, of course, and I'm happy to, you know, I'd be unhappy to be wrong in this, but I don't think that the board is going to make a serious effort to try to reincorporate. They, you know, they will have canvassed enough shareholders, figured out that they're going to lose the vote, and they've already had enough hits to their credibility. They don't need another one along these lines. And
what about the supermajority vote request, which also, I believe, requires a board approval, shareholder vote, and I presume it would be, you know, converting some of his single voting shares into super voting shares. I don't know how you get him to 20%.
Yeah, there's all sorts of different ways to, assuming the board wants to exceed and grant Musk's request for this kind of control over the company. And I'm not sure that fact will happen. We can come back to that. Okay. Assuming that they do that, though, there are a number of different ways of trying to structure that. You know, they could try to reclass some of his shares into super voting shares. They could issue in some more shares and get into some really funky dilution problems. They could just give him some more comp over time. There's all sorts of ways to try to do this. And in one respect, that would be viewed as sort of something of a redo of the comp case that he just lost. You know, that comp case was going to take his shares up from the current 13% to well over 20. It was like 21 or 22%, which was not far. You know, it was within shouting distance of the 25% that he wanted. So it's not clear whether he made this demand, and he couched it as saying, I'm going to, develop my AI and automated driving technologies elsewhere if you don't. It wasn't clear whether he was doing that because, you know, this is just the next phase of how he wanted to develop, you know, his ideas, or whether that was a response to the loss in Chancery Court on the $55, $56 billion. It's probably a combination of both, but there's all sorts of ways they could try to do it.
But all of them requires a shareholder vote, and you suspect that somebody would file a lawsuit about a shareholder file a lawsuit about, like, you know, losing.
That's the thing, basically, is that if they try to restructure the stock, you know, create super voting shares, they'll certainly need some sort of a shareholder approval on that, and that would be hard to get. If they were to try to find some other more subtle way of getting him compensation, you know, giving him some more shares or some sort of whatever over time, I think they're just asking for another lawsuit along the lines of the one that they just lost. And they may, you know, go back and redo things a little differently. They may create a more independent board. They may do the shareholder vote a little bit. There are all sorts of reasons why Musk lost in this lawsuit.
The lack of independence of the
board. Yeah. Right.
They need to bring in new directors to make this decision, probably, no?
And that's not happening either, because I think Musk likes his board. And so they could try to get like sort of a redo on the comp stuff. But again, they're probably going to face more litigation on this. And I think my sense is that the board's got to be tired of this kind of stuff. And that combined with all the pressure that I'm sure they're under between share price and accusations of lack of independence and so forth, that may get back to the larger point, is that they may, and I would love to see this as a Tesla show, they may start to push back a little more on CEO Musk. I don't know how that's going to happen, okay? But they may be in a position where they're going to try to do that. We'll see how it works. And you know, say, hey, you can't spend as much time on some of the other businesses. You know, you get to take a dollar comp or whatever. But there may be some opportunity for the board to, you know, assert some degree of independence, at least with respect to this enormous comp ask, you know, for 25% of the shares.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there was the activists often target companies where they have CEO that has, you know, if they're involved in multiple companies, you know, running multiple companies. Like that was actually Jack Dorsey was targeted by Elliott. Remember when he was in charge of Square and Twitter at the same time? And Musk is in charge of so many different companies and so many things.
Yeah, activists have a hard enough time with people with directors serving on too many boards.
Right.
You know,
CEO serving on
CEO serving multiple jobs is crazy. Exactly. So we'll see. So, it should be interesting, right? You know, right now for the 2024 annual meeting, which will be the next, you know, most visible way to sort of see how things are going. We haven't seen any materials yet. We don't know what proposals are on the ballot. We don't know who's running. If there's any dissident directors, I think now we probably would have found out by now. But we'll sort of see how the board handles that. There may be, I wouldn't be surprised to see a new director or two. To try to at least, you know, give the appearance of trying to create a little more independence, but who knows?
I was thinking maybe they should move if they want to do all these things. I think, you know, for example, the supermajority vote.
Yeah.
It would make more sense if they, you know, first. I think the first battle for Elon Musk is to move from Delaware to Texas and then revisit the pay package.
Well, that's the whole premise. Musk didn't want to move the company from Delaware to Texas because he doesn't like the hotels in Wilmington. though not many people do.
No.
He wanted to move it to Texas because he perceives that Texas would be a lot friendlier to some of the stuff he wants to do, like. Right. You know, more comp or, you know, would protect his board members more. And my point there is that that's not going to happen anytime soon. If it ever happens, it's not going to happen soon enough for him to, achieve those goals. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll be watching Tesla's meeting and whether they do any of these things that Elon Musk wants them to do. But for now, we are out of time. And you've been listening to the Activist Investing Today podcast with Ron Orl. And we've been speaking to Michael Levin of the Activist Investor website. Thanks, Michael, for taking the time.
Terrific to be here. Thanks so much.